Welcome to our deep dive into the Book of Ecclesiastes. We're using excerpts from a lecture by Dr. Al Furr to help us, and I'm really excited to get into this one. Ecclesiastes is one of those books that can seem really dense and even depressing at first glance, but when you really start digging into it, it's full of these amazing insights about life, the universe, and everything.
It's true. Ecclesiastes doesn't shy away from the big questions. And one of the keys to unlocking its wisdom is understanding this Hebrew word hevel.
Right. Hevel. Most translations just render it as meaningless. But as we'll see, it's so much richer than that. And Dr. Furr does a fantastic job of breaking it all down.
He really does. And that's actually our mission for this deep dive, to really understand hevel and how it shapes the message of Ecclesiastes.
Okay. So let's start with the basics. What does hevel actually mean?
The literal translation of hevel is mist or vapor. Think about how mist disappears as the sun rises, or how vapor evaporates into thin air. It's that sense of transience, of things fading away.
That's a much more vivid image than just meaningless, right? It starts to give you a feel for what the author Qohelet is grappling with.
Exactly. And it's important to remember that in Hebrew, words often have these metaphorical layers. It's not just about the literal meaning, but also the imagery and associations they evoke, like how we might compare God to a rock for strength and stability.
I like the analogy Dr. Furr uses. He says hevel is what's left after a soap bubble pops. There's this moment of beauty and wonder, and then poof, it's gone.
That's such a powerful way to think about it, and it ties directly into the human experience. Our lives are like those bubbles in many ways. Fleeting, fragile, and constantly changing.
So that's one aspect of hevel, that idea of fleetingness. But Dr. Furr talks about families of meaning. What are some of the other ways hevel is used?
Well, besides fleetingness, hevel can also convey a sense of vanity, like we're chasing after the wind, putting in a ton of effort, but not really getting anywhere.
Yeah. You see that theme a lot in Ecclesiastes. The author tries all these different things, wisdom, pleasure, work, but ultimately finds them all to be hevel. You know that feeling of spinning your wheels, working hard but not getting anywhere. That's hevel in action. Ecclesiastes encourages us to recognize those traps and focus on what truly matters.
That's a great point. We see it in Ecclesiastes 2.71, where Qohelet says, "Yet when I surveyed all that my hands had done and what I had toiled to achieve, everything was meaningless, a chasing after the wind. Nothing was gained under the sun."
That's pretty bleak. It makes you wonder, if even wisdom and achievement can't overcome hevel, what can?
That's a question Qohelet wrestles with throughout the book. But it's important to remember that he doesn't just stop there. He keeps searching. And that search leads him to some really profound insights.
Okay, so we've got fleetingness and vanity. What other family members are in the hevel clan?
Another key aspect of hevel is absurdity. It's that feeling that things just don't make sense, that the world can be random and unfair.
Like when you see good people suffering and bad people prospering. I think we've all felt that sense of, this isn't right. There's no logic to this.
Exactly. Dr. Furr shared a really powerful anecdote about a friend who suffered unjustly. It really drove home that hevel isn't just an abstract concept. It has real emotional weight.
Yeah. It's not just about intellectualizing things. It's about that gut level feeling of, this isn't how it should be.
And that leads us to the final family member, negative judgment. Hevel isn't just an observation. It's a judgment about the state of things, a recognition that something is fundamentally wrong.
So we've got these four families of meaning wrapped up in this one little word, hevel. Fleetingness, vanity, absurdity, and negative judgment. It's almost like Qohelet is saying, look, the world is a messy, unpredictable place, and sometimes it just doesn't make sense.
He's definitely not sugarcoating things, is he? But here's what I find so fascinating. Even though Qohelet is acutely aware of hevel, he doesn't just wallow in despair. He actually sets out on this quest to find a solution, something he calls
Yitron. What's that all about?
Yitron can be understood as a surplus, a gain, or even a solution to the problem of hevel. Qohelet wants to know, is there anything that can transcend the fleetingness, the vanity, the absurdity? Is there anything that can bring true and lasting satisfaction?
So it's like he's acknowledging the reality of hevel, but also refusing to settle for it.
Exactly. And he tries everything. He immerses himself in wisdom. He pursues pleasure. He throws himself into work. But as he explores each of these avenues, he keeps hitting this wall of hevel.
He realizes that even achieving great things, even experiencing great joy, doesn't fully solve the problem of Hevel.
Right, because no matter how much we achieve or experience, there's still this underlying sense that it's all temporary, that will eventually fade away. And that's a really humbling realization.
I can see how that would be discouraging,
yeah,
even for someone as wise as Coelho. So what happens next? Does he just give up and resign himself to a life of Hevel?
No, he doesn't give up, but he does shift his focus. Instead of trying to find Yitron, a complete solution to the problem of Hevel, he starts looking for something else. Toph.
Okay, Toph. Another new word. Break it down for me.
Toph simply means good. But in the context of Ecclesiastes, it takes on this really profound significance. It's about finding what is good and beneficial within the reality of Hevel.
So instead of trying to fix the unfixable, he's saying, okay, given that life is fleeting, that our efforts are often vain, and that the world can be absurd, what is the best way to live? What can I find that is truly good and worth pursuing?
You've got it. It's this incredibly nuanced and insightful shift. Coelho moves from seeking a grand solution to Hevel, to embracing the good that can be found within it.
And I think that's something that resonates with a lot of people today. We may not be able to solve all the world's problems, or even our own problems for that matter.
Yeah.
But we can still look for the good, the beautiful, the meaningful, even in the midst of difficulty and uncertainty.
Absolutely. And that's where Ecclesiastes becomes incredibly relevant for us today. It's not about denying the hard realities of life, but about finding a way to live well within those realities.
This whole conversation about Hevel makes me think about something Dr. Furr said, about the connection between Hevel and the concept of fallenness from Genesis.
Yes. He pointed out how Ecclesiastes keeps referencing back to Genesis, almost like it's saying that Hevel is a direct result of humanity's fall from grace. We live in a world that's broken, that's not as it should be. And that brokenness is reflected in the Hevel we experience.
So this idea of Hevel isn't just some abstract philosophical concept. It's tied to this deeper reality of a world that's out of sync, a world that's groaning under the weight of its own brokenness.
That's exactly it. And it's interesting to see how this concept of Hevel pops up in other parts of the Bible as well.
Like where?
Well, even in the New Testament, you see this idea in Romans 8.20, Paul uses the same Greek word that translates Hevel in the Septuagint, which was the ancient Greek translation of the Hebrew Bible. He says, "For the creation was subjected to frustration, not by its own choice, but by the will of the one who subjected it, in hope."
Frustration.
Yeah.
That definitely has some Hevel vibes, right? This sense of things being out of whack, not working the way they're supposed to.
It's that same feeling of things being off, of the world not quite living up to its potential. But notice that last part of the verse, in hope. Even though Paul acknowledges the frustration, the brokenness, he also points towards hope.
So even though we're stuck in this world of Hevel, there's still a glimmer of something more.
There is, and that's something that Coelho hints at as well. Though he doesn't fully explore it, remember. He's looking for Tov, the good that can be found within the reality of Hevel.
So maybe that's part of the answer. Maybe finding Tov is our way of participating in that hope, of pushing back against the brokenness, even if we can't completely fix it.
I think that's a beautiful way to put it.
Okay, so we've gone deep on Hevel and Tov. But what about Yitron? Did Coelho ever find that ultimate solution, that surplus that transcends all the messiness and brokenness?
That's a million-dollar question, isn't it? And I think that's where things get really interesting.
So we left off with this question of Yitron. Did Coelho ever find that ultimate solution to the Hevel dilemma?
Well, if we're talking about Yitron as this kind of all-encompassing answer, this way of escaping the realities of a broken world, then no, at least not in the way he initially hoped.
So in a way, his search for Yitron was kind of like chasing after the wind itself, a form of Hevel.
You could definitely see it that way. But I don't think that means his search was pointless, in fact. I think his struggle to find Yitron actually leads him to an even deeper understanding of Kav.
How so?
By recognizing that there's no easy fix, no magic bullet that will eliminate all the Hevel in the world. Coelho is forced to grapple with the question of how to live well in the midst of it. And that's where Toph comes in.
It's like instead of trying to transcend Hevel, he learns to embrace the good that can be found within it.
Exactly. And this is where Ecclesiastes offers some really practical wisdom. Remember, Coelho isn't just a philosopher. He's also a teacher.
Yeah.
And he wants to share what he's learned with his readers.
So what kind of practical advice does he give?
Well, he talks a lot about finding joy in simple things. Enjoying a good meal. Spending time with loved ones. Appreciating the beauty of nature. These are all examples of Tov that can be found even in a world full of Hevel.
It reminds me of that passage in chapter 9. Where Coelho says, to enjoy life with your wife, whom you love, all the days of this meaningless life that God has given you under the sun.
That's a great example. Even though he calls life meaningless in that passage, he's still emphasizing the importance of finding joy in relationships and experiencing the good things that life has to offer.
It's like he's saying, look, I know life is fleeting and that things don't always make sense, but that doesn't mean we can't find moments of beauty and connection.
Precisely. And that's the power of Tov. It's not about denying the reality of Hevel, but about choosing to focus on the good, even in the midst of hardship and uncertainty.
I think that's a really important message, especially in today's world. It's so easy to get caught up in the negativity, to focus on all the things that are wrong. But Ecclesiastes reminds us that there's still so much good out there, if we're willing to look for it.
It's about shifting our perspective, about training ourselves to see the good, even when it's surrounded by Hevel. And I think that's a skill that can be cultivated.
Per, how do we do that? How do we get better at recognizing and appreciating Tao in our own lives?
Well, I think it starts with being intentional. It's about making a conscious effort to notice the good things, the small moments of beauty and joy that often go unnoticed.
So instead of just rushing through our day, we need to slow down and really pay attention to the world around us.
Exactly. Take a moment to savor that cup of coffee in the morning. Mm. Really listen to a loved one when they're talking to you. Go for a walk in nature and appreciate the beauty of the trees and the sky.
It's about being present in the moment and appreciating the gifts that we often take for granted.
And I think it's also about gratitude. When we focus on the things we're grateful for, it becomes easier to see the good, even when things are tough.
So maybe that's part of what Kohelet was getting at. When he shifted his focus from Yitron to Tov, maybe it wasn't just about finding a solution to the problem of Hevel, but about finding a way to live a life that was rich in meaning and purpose, despite the Hevel.
I think you're right. And maybe that's the true challenge of Ecclesiastes, to embrace both the Hevel and the Tov, to recognize the limitations of life in a fallen world, while still choosing to seek out and celebrate the good.
It's about finding that balance, that tension between acknowledging the reality of the world as it is and still choosing to live with hope and joy.
And maybe that's where we find a different kind of answer to Kohelet's quest for meaning, not a solution that eliminates Hevel, but a way of living that allows us to find beauty and goodness even in the midst of it.
So as we wrap up this deep dive into Ecclesiastes, maybe the question we should be asking ourselves isn't how do we escape Hevel, but rather, what Tov will we choose to embrace today?
And how will we let that Tov shape our lives, even in a world that's full of fleetingness, vanity, absurdity, and brokenness?